This is Around the Rim with LaChyna Robinson.
Hello, basketball fans. It is your favorite time of the week, or some of our casts have reminded us, your favorite time of the last 3 weeks, because we finally have a new episode of your ESPNW Women's Basketball Podcast, Around the Rim. I am your host, LaChyna Robinson, joined by my fantastic and fabulous producer, Tarika Foster Bradsby. One notably missing person from this podcast is our co-host, two-time WNBA champion, Devereaux Peters. That would be because Devereaux is booked and busy. And I just want to say that the reason why we have not had a podcast in 3 weeks is mainly because Tarika and Dev are busy. Okay?
The shade.
I've got receipts that I will put on Twitter if they want to force me to, clearing my name, but the kind of slanderous conversation that was happening in regards to my role and why we have not had a podcast, it's lies. It's fake news.
I will not let you besmirch my good name out here talking about it was me. Fans, I just want the record to state that I am always available. Even when I'm not available, I still make myself available. LaChyna and Dev are two very busy individuals who have very, very demanding careers. And, you know, me, I'm just chilling. I'm just chilling at home on Twitter, doing nothing, waiting for these two. So let her pull her receipts if she wants to.
You know what? I'm not going to address this right now in its entirety because...
What's good, LaChyna?
If Dev... Oh, really? Really, Kelsey Plum? That's what we're doing right now? That's fine. By the way, Kelsey Playoff Plum, okay, as she is now named, even though the Las Vegas Aces have departed the WNBA playoffs, and we're going to talk about that. Just so you guys know, this is a full-out playoff show. Like, we are talking about all the juice that we've missed over the last 3 weeks from the ridiculous De'Erica Hamby heave, and the devastating end to the Chicago Sky season, to Playoff Plum, to Liz Cambage telling the Mystics to get in the weight room, to Candace Parker getting benched in game 3 of their playoff series with the Connecticut Sun, to where we are now, which, if you are not paying attention, the Connecticut Sun and the Washington Mystics are in the WNBA Finals. Game 1 has already happened. Game 2 is set to happen tomorrow. So we've got you covered on all of it. But yes, in regards to the what's good, LaChyna, which Kelsey Plum did say to me during a game, which actually, let me put this to rest. She did not say what's good, LaChyna. Okay. What she did say cannot be repeated on air because there was a curse word involved. And basically what she was saying was like, mess with me, LaChyna. Like, hey, let's, you know, get on this because I'm about to take off, you know. But she said a little curse word. She did confirm that with me. She was like, actually what I said was, but I mess with Plum. I really like her. She is such a competitor. She said in the post game presser, she said, you know what? Someone asked her about it. She said, no, I really like LaChyna, which is true. We have a great back and forth relationship, but she listens to the games and she gives me, you know, crap if she got questions about something I said, and I go right back at her and say, well, this is what I saw. And I like that kind of dialogue with players. Like, I'm going to be real. Like, I can like you, but I'm still going to tell you the truth. And so let's get that out there. We could be friends. I could like you. I could think you're a cool person, but if you make a bad decision on the court or you do something on the court, I am going to say that, period. And I'm always going to express my opinion, and hopefully that's respected. But yeah, so me and Plum are good. Everybody cool off with the drama. But yeah, so we've got a lot to talk about on the show. Tarika, are you still here?
I am. I was just over here taking notes.
Disappeared. Well, Dev's not here, so
I was just taking notes. I was taking notes because I know that you and Kelsey Plum. Kelsey Plum has been on the show a couple of times, so she's definitely dope. So
we might need to get her.
Yes, we need to get her back. We had her. Well, here's the thing: we have not had her on the show as a member of the Las Vegas Aces.
Okay, so we need to do that.
Yeah, we had her on the show at when she was a student at Washington. We had her on the show her rookie season, but we have not had her on the show just since she's been with Las Vegas. So, number two.
Well, we need to do that.
We do.
What's number two?
Yep, number two is do not steal from us, the fans, what we have come to love over the last 3 days. The What's Good, LaChina has really pivoted our Twitter accounts, and we are going to continue with it. So,
are we? Why? Nobody asked how I felt about this.
So there's that. So I was just taking notes, but we do have a packed show. I'm very excited. At some point, we are crossing our fingers that Dev will eventually join us on the show. So if you do hear a third voice, you know in advance that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. Dev, you can show up. Let's go. Well, meanwhile, we got a show to do.
All right. Well, basketball fans, Sunday was the big day, the day that all of us have been waiting for, which was game one of the WNBA finals. And I'm not sure that those of us here in New England got the results that we wanted, but for the majority of the world, it turned out to be exactly what most people expected, which was a good offensive performance from Washington, who won last night 95-86. LaChina, I think it's fair to say that Ariel Atkins had a heck of a game, to really catapult the team, over the threshold. We knew what we were going to see from Elena Delladon, but, just from your perspective overall, what did you see from Washington, or at least what did you think you would see from Washington coming into this game versus, you know, what did you see from them on the court on Sunday?
So let me say this, I think what we saw in game one from Washington had a lot to do with Las Vegas. And I don't want anybody to take this the wrong way. So let me express myself here. Las Vegas got better as the playoffs went on. Because if you remember, they had a brutal losing streak to end the regular season. They did get back on track. I think they beat Phoenix on the road. But on the road, they were like really bad, right? Down the stretch of the regular season, mm-hmm. and they had some tiredness. I mean, every team hits their wall. So that was the Las Vegas Aces. And I don't know how confident anybody felt in their ability to have success in the playoffs, despite what we have seen from them all year, which they've been a solid team, definitely a championship contender. But it's like they hit a rough patch at the wrong time. Like every coach will tell you, I want to start the playoffs or in the regular season, head into the playoffs, playing our best basketball. We could all say that that was not the case with the Aces. However, the heave by De'Erica Hamby, the big shot that she made at the end of that Chicago, Las Vegas game in the second round of the playoffs, which, by the way, came with much controversy. But her hitting that shot seemed to really renew the Las Vegas Aces. Now, they played well in that game, don't get me wrong. But I think that shot to them was their proof that destiny wanted them to have success in these playoffs because they got such a punch from it. Now, we'll talk a little bit about the actual Chicago situation and how all of that went. But to tie it back into what I was saying about Washington, even though it didn't go five, that was a hard-fought series for Washington. Like, Vegas is such a physically and mentally draining team. Like, you have to really be putting in a lot on both ends of the floor to really beat them. And at the end of the day, they have size, which you can't teach, which no matter how you scheme, it wears you out by the end of the day because you're going up against 6'8 and 6'5 like every time down the floor. Poor LaToya Sanders and Emma Mieseman and Delladon and everybody else that had to jump in on that duo of Asia Wilson and Liz Cambage. But we saw some brilliance from both of them. Mm-hmm. Most notably Cambage, who was outstanding with a double-double just about every night. I thought, you know, Asia Wilson had definitely some off nights. But they really made Washington have to show a different level of toughness. And I said this repeatedly during the series. They made Delladon work for every shot. Like, she had to really work hard. Vegas was the number one defense in the league all year. And we saw a lot of that reason why, because they gave the Mystics some trouble. Now, even if that was just for the one game that Washington lost, that we saw it, we saw that effort actually turn in Vegas's favor, you still felt like just about any game could have gone Vegas's way. Mm-hmm. I mean, even down to that plum shot where she got fouled, which we can talk about that later too.
We will talk about that later.
I hope you're adding all this to the list of juice, because we just got so many things to debate. But I think we saw a Washington team that just came out of a series where they really had to fight, you know, and, another thing that we saw was a Connecticut Sun team that had just played in their first finals game. Not taking anything away from Washington, but experience counts. Like, I talk about this all the time with WNBA teams. It's like, listen, when you've been there, done that, like, it's an advantage. You know, when you know how to prepare yourself mentally, because it's different. Like, the media availability is different, and just the hype around it is different. You got family texting you about tickets and all this stuff. I mean, I definitely wish Deb was on here so she could speak to this, but it's just a different level. It's a different level for us as broadcasters. You know, people want to, oh, can we come down on the floor and just get a quick interview before the game starts? Or, you know, different things we have to do, and talking to newspapers and writing stories, like, more than anything, it's just a different level. So I thought that Connecticut giving up 30 points in the first quarter was just a sign of a team that's like, okay, we're in the finals. How's this all work? Now, they have not shied away from the spotlight at all, and have played the entire playoffs since they stepped on the floor with LA, like, we belong here and we're ready for this moment. So I'm not taking away from how they were prepared, but I do think that anyone's first time in the finals, I think Jasmine Thomas is the only player on that team that's played in the finals. By the way, happy birthday, Jasmine Thomas.
Oh, happy birthday.
DMV's finest. But, so I thought that was a lot of what we saw early, and then they adjusted. I mean, for the rest of the game, it was, you know, I mean, Washington was up as many as 17 points, and Connecticut fought back within a couple of possessions towards the end of the fourth quarter. So that's what we want, right? We want to see two teams really battling it out. And so I thought in game one, we saw experience really come into play. I think we saw a battle-tested Washington Mystics team. Now, when we look at what actually happened as far as the strategy and back and forth, I mean, Kurt Miller and Mike Tebow are two great coaches. So we're going to see a chess match of changes with matchups and schemes, and who are you going to let shoot and who you're not. I mean, Courtney Williams, for example, a player that is well known for her long two ball, in her mid-range game, but that long two is her shot. I mean, she was crazy from three-point land. That might have been her best three-point shooting game, which she even said after in the presser, in her career. So she brings that aspect, and you needed someone to stretch the floor because Strickland was struggling from long range, right? And credit the Mystics, who, you know, use a smaller guard on Strickland, like a Christy Tolliver, to guard her, to kind of, you know, just get in her, take away her space, even though Tolliver is not as big. So, we saw some scheming stuff, but Jasmine Thomas, I thought, was not the Jasmine Thomas that we had seen in the LA series, at least in the first half. She did get better as time went on, but she is their rock. Like, I've said it a number of times. I don't know if there's a better leader in the WNBA, and I'll say that again and again. A lot of it is because of how young the team she's leading is. And it's not like she's got a ton of experience or help on that roster to help her lead, especially with Leja Clarendon, you know, after she went down, which is good to see her back in warmups. Long story short, Tarika, because I know you want to jump in here on your son. I thought that Natasha Cloud proved why she's one of the best defenders in this league and what she does to Jasmine Thomas. I also thought that the free throw situation was different from what I imagined, with Washington being a jump shooting team and Connecticut being so quick and athletic off the bounce. I thought they would have gotten to the line more. It was good that they were able to turn Washington over and get some offense from that, because Washington is not a high turnover team. So at least you walk away with your confidence saying, hey, we disrupted them defensively. But at the end of the day, the weapons. I mean, Ariel Atkins was outstanding for Washington. And, you know, we saw that from her last year in the finals. And, you know, this year has not been as consistent, and you can say for whatever reasons, but something happens to that girl when the big games are here. I mean, she had 21 points on 7 field goal attempts, 7 field goal attempts and had 21 points. So she only needed 7 shots. She also had 5 rebounds. And I mentioned this on Twitter yesterday. I think Emma was brilliant too. I thought when they went to the big lineup, Connecticut really just didn't have an answer for them. Because at some positions, Connecticut's just smaller. I mean, the point guard spot, they're going to be smaller. You know, Jasmine Thomas gives up inches to Cloud, or, you know, Courtney Williams is not that big. So depending on who's on the perimeter, whether it's Powers, we saw her at the 2, or Emma, Deladon, whatever, you know, they can cover up Courtney Williams a little better than other teams can. But she's got the quickness factor. She's just unstoppable. Anyway.
Yeah, she is. 26 points behind that. I think they had Atkins on her covering her a little bit defensively last night too, and she just didn't care.
Right. But Atkins was like, she was playoff Atkins.
Right.
Like, she was what we saw last year that helped Washington get over the hump with Atlanta. And with Christy Tolliver, this is what I said on my Twitter, with Christy Tolliver back in the lineup, it released Ariel Atkins, in my opinion. Like, I like the big lineup. But Mike Tebow made the right call in putting Christy Tolliver back in the lineup. And you can see that by how much more fluid they are when she's, you know, getting in the lane and making great passes. Like, you know, she took off her knee brace and now she's driving, and it's just opening up so many great passes and good ball movement. And Washington is scoring the way we know them to score.
And you know what else too? I think it also plays a part that this is the first time that this Connecticut team is really seeing Washington at full strength. And I know, like, the season is so far away, and especially considering when in the season they last saw each other and played each other, they didn't have the opportunity to play Washington while they were at complete full strength. First game, we know they didn't have Elena Deladon, and Christy was injured midway through. Second and third time they faced off, there was no Emma Mieseman. So they did not literally have the opportunity to see this team at full power to really understand the offensive juggernaut that they were getting ready to come across. And I really think that that plays a role, as well as the fact that, and this is no disrespect to LA, because I admit I thought that LA was going to go all the way this year. So, you know, I am one of the people who doubted the Sun because of their youth and their inexperience. But I don't think that it did them any favors having not been challenged by LA in the way that you mentioned that Washington was challenged by Las Vegas coming into this series. They handedly defeated LA coming into this, you know, and then they also had the fuel of being the whole disrespect thing, the whole role players things that we'll talk about a little bit later in the show as well. So they were confident coming into this game, and I think they were confident from a mental perspective, but I don't think that they had physically been challenged the way that they, you know, eventually were coming into this game. And I believe that you could see that when they were on the court. And it's not to say, again, because they pulled within 4, there was a little bit of a breakdown there, so they were close. But again, when you add experience, and when you add that, you know, you've got people on this team who've been in this position before, literally just a season ago, that makes all the difference. And I think that they will look at that heading into Tuesday night's game.
Yeah, and I'm there with you about LA, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't watch that series as closely as I did our own, because we were watching games and doing stuff. But even if it's just that last game, right, where Connecticut didn't have to face a team in the fourth quarter who their backs were against the wall, and they knew this was their last shot. Now, they faced the bench of that team, and we'll talk about that later, but, you know, Derek Fisher pulling his starters in the fourth, you know, and most notably Candace Parker, who I think only played like 11 minutes, just that whole benching situation. So not to take anything away from who did play for LA, but totally different, you know, facing basically a championship lineup and having to really fight and claw your way out. It also was not a true home court advantage. It didn't feel like it, at least. I mean, I wasn't there, but it definitely didn't feel like...
Yeah, they were playing in Long Beach.
The Staples Center. Like, so, and in turn, Washington was jumping, you know, in their game one. So very different for Connecticut. But I'm going back to the Atkins thought. I just want to finish it. I think with Christy Tauber back in the lineup, Ariel Atkins doesn't have to do as much lead guard stuff. Like, it was her, who's a second year player, and Cloud basically trying to run the guard spots in the big lineup. And then you had Emma, Deladon, and Toya. And not to say that they're not helpful, but in their system, their guards are responsible for the penetration, for the kicking, for the kind of, you know, making things happen. It's great. A facilitator is Emma Mieseman, and, you know, obviously Deladon can score and so on. But anyway, Washington just looked like a more experienced team in game one.
So let's look ahead to game two. They're going to be facing off on Tuesday night on ESPN. Again, Washington having the home court advantage. They will still be in D.C. for this game. What do you think needs to happen from, let's start with Connecticut first? Again, you mentioned, as we both mentioned, Courtney Williams had an amazing game. And again, even though, you know, she was played defensively tough, she still was able to, you know, score 26 points, leading all scorers last night, shot 48.5% from the field. But someone else has to come up and has to match her execution level. So who do you see from Connecticut, or what do you expect to see from Connecticut in tomorrow in game two that you think can help put them over the edge, or at least bring them a little bit closer to, if not defeating the Sun, defeating the Mystics as close as possible to winning game two?
Well, I think one thing that we'll see is I think Connecticut will guard the drive better. I just thought Washington got way too many, or maybe I'll say way more touches off of the drive in the paint than I expected. I like Connecticut's defense when they're engaged and they're active. And there were just times where there were just too many easy, like, either layups or looks at the rim or driving kicks from the middle of the floor. So I think they'll shore some of that up. If nothing else, it's, hey, we got to keep two shoulders in front of us, in front of the ball handler, and kind of stop some of that penetration. We also may see something different defensively, as far as like Shakina Strickland and who she's guarding. You know, Rebecca Lobo made a great point and continued to say it, because Washington was disciplined enough to continue to go to it during the game. But she was like, Washington is attacking Shakina Strickland, like, nothing against her whatsoever, because I've seen her do some really savvy things defensively, but that's just not her strong suit, right? And so her ability to keep up with a quicker Washington Mystics player, just, and this is with the small lineup, so this is where a smaller lineup actually has a bit more of an advantage, because then Strickland is trying to guard Ariel Atkins, and it's like, oh, yeah, Atkins was definitely, you know, using her quickness. So I think we'll see some things differently there. I also think that we will see Connecticut try to get more of the turnovers, like turning up their pressure defensively. Getting out in transition is where they're really good. So I think we'll see them pick up the heat a little bit more there. I would like to see more Jonquel Jones involvement on the offensive end.
Thank
if nothing
you.
Else, just because I think that's going to help them get to the free throw line. Like, second chance points are where they were good all year. And, you know, they had a good number. You just never felt they had that same presence, especially with her on the offensive glass and how she can get putbacks and get fouled and and-ones. Like, they've got to find a way to get to the free throw line. And I think working through Jonquel in the post and, you know, her offensive rebounding, but also them looking to drive from the perimeter. Because defensively, like, we talk about Washington's offense, but to me, Connecticut's a better defensive team than Washington. And so they've got to utilize that strength. And, you know, reason why they're better to me is they're just quicker and more athletic. So use that on the offensive end as well, and try to look to take Washington off of the drive. So those are a few things we'll see them do differently. But, you know, they're going to have to definitely move Ariel Atkins up the scouting report. You know, Washington did some things where they had their post defending their point guard. And so now, you know, each coach has at least shown a little bit of what they've got in the game plan. And no doubt Kurt Miller will address. He's a great coach, and I'm sure he'll be ready for game two.
Agreed. Yes. Just to finish off my quick little point, please get to the free throw line. I saw Morgan Tuck come off the bench, and she was able to penetrate the inside, and she was able to do some things for her few minutes that I think helped pull them closer in range. And I think if they do that a little bit more, then you're right. That's what we need to see. Yes, this is the Connecticut Sun fan, Tarika speaking, not the producer. Okay. Moving on.
I knew it was coming.
Of course it was coming. I've been talking a lot of crap around here, and I need to make sure that I'm being backed up with the stuff that I say. There's a lot of DMV folk around here at ESPN, so we're definitely outnumbered over here.
Boo.
Hater. All right, well, we will look ahead to game two. Again, Tuesday, ESPN. Make sure you are tuned in. Do not be that person that we are calling out on Twitter for missing it too late.
So in the first half, we took a look at the series between the Connecticut Sun and the Washington Mystics, the two teams that have advanced to the WNBA Finals. Now in the second half, did anybody see the drama with Liz Cambage, the trash talking? Oh, my goodness. Well, we've got you covered. Oh, wait, what about the shot by Derek Hamby? Did you see that? We're going to talk about all of that and more as we recap what we've seen in the finals up to this point right after the break. So stay with us.
All right. So before we got to the finals, we probably should have given you guys a quick recap of how we actually ended up here, because I know it seems like forever ago, but a lot happened leading up to this point. So if we go back to the beginning, we started off this playoff season with Chicago facing off against Phoenix. Mercury were already shorthanded. Remember, they didn't have Diana Taurasi. Second quarter of that game, Griner actually ended up going out with a knee injury. And it looks like the team just kind of completely fell apart from the second half on. So the Sky cruised to a 105-76 victory in that game, moving them on to face the Las Vegas Aces. And what I think turned out to be probably one of the most exciting basketball games of the year, playoff or regular season. I mean, it was really, really good. They were down 92-90 with seconds left on the clock. And somehow, some way, Courtney Vandersloot was stripped by De'Erica Hamby. And she didn't realize how much time was left on the clock. And I'm sure if she did, she may have made a different decision. But the decision she made was to heave it up and go for it, and nailed the shot, which basically gave the Aces the edge of a 93-92 win, sending the Sky home. And let's start here, because there is not going to be a play without some kind of controversy. And there definitely was after this, because James Wade and several others tried to say that there was evidence that Hamby stepped out of bounds, that before shooting the ball, she stepped out of bounds, therefore the shot wouldn't have count. But, you know, a lot of other people were asking, why didn't Sloot just hang on to the ball? You know, why did she need to even try to pass the ball at that moment, which would even give Hamby an opportunity to cut off her lane? Either way, LaChina, you were there. You were calling that game. Give us some insight. What was the atmosphere like? Were you able to see if her foot was on the line? And how was the reaction when Hamby hit that shot?
there's so much. There's just like so many different things, so many different angles of this game to really try to rehash. But first, let me just give a shout out to the Aces, because I was not sure how well their fans would travel to Thomas and Mack, considering that they usually play at Mandalay Bay. Bill Laimbeer penned a letter to their fans asking them to support, so I think that definitely helped. But the atmosphere was great. There were a lot of people there. I don't know if it was apparent over the television broadcast, but it was definitely, you know, a great showing. James Harden was courtside. It definitely had a big game feel to it. So in those waning moments, I saw James Wade telling Courtney Vandersloot to catch the ball in the backcourt, which you can do. I think he was trying to get her away from some of the pressure, knowing that Vegas was going to try to get a steal. Also, you know, help with spacing a little bit. The problem with that was that because it looked like it was kind of a last minute like realization and communication by Wade to Courtney Vandersloot, I don't think the rest of her team knew what she was doing. And so that impacts, you know, if people come back to get the ball, where they are. I mean, just so many things. It all of a sudden, the backcourt line comes into play, right? 8 second backcourt, you know, there's just so many things all of a sudden that become a factor. And the bottom line is, if Courtney Vandersloot never throws the ball, she gets fouled, goes to the free throw line, right? Like, she does not necessarily have to pass it because they've got a lead. So everything was really in Chicago's control. At this point, Vegas was trying to foul and extend the game. But, yeah, they're going to go for a steal. Now, we were on the opposite end of the court. So when I say opposite end, opposite side. So we could not see what was happening on the sideline when De'Erica's foot supposedly went out of bounds. That is not a reviewable play. So everyone kept saying, well, why don't the officials go back and look? You cannot go back and look to see if somebody's foot goes out of bounds if the call was not made. So there was no call on the floor made. And I think there was some confusion because there was some game stoppage and the officials came together, which, you know, there's some, it's hazy as to what the officials were really looking at. They did not tell me. They did communicate with somebody on our crew, but we never, you know, found out exactly what that communication was, what they were looking for. They could have been looking back to see how much time was supposed to be on the clock, because there was time left on the clock after De'Erica hit the shot. But long story short, they were not talking about whether or not her foot went out of bounds. I went back and looked. I can't tell. People have blown up the picture. I mean, there's no definitive look of the side of her foot out of bounds. There are some pictures that look like her foot sure was out. But I don't know. I really can't say. But long story short, Chicago was saying right away, and James Wade was on top of it, but so were the officials. I believe it was Eric Bruton who looked like he was
right on the line, right?
Yeah. He was right there. So it's just so much that happens and it's gone on, you know, in those moments, and there's so much excitement, but the game must go on. So he gets a timeout, and that's what was communicated to me, at least, that he called a timeout. So that's why there's game stoppage at that point. And, after De'Erica hit the shot, but when she hit the shot, Tarika, when she hit the shot, that place went nuts. De'Erica had no idea how much time was on the clock. She had enough time that if she wanted to put the ball on the floor and get to the rim, she probably could have. She also had some teammates down the floor. But if you notice, and she and I have talked about this many a time since this happened, her eyes never left the rim. I thought she was looking up at the clock. De'Erica was looking at the rim. She looked at it not once, but twice. She had her whole eyes on the rim and was going to shoot that ball. And there was really nothing anybody could do. Earlier in that day, she made a half-court shot and shoot around. Like all the WNBA teams usually in their practice shooting, you know, half-court shots. And she made hers. And so you look back on that and you're like, wow, like, was she heating up for this shot? It was the most exciting game winner I've ever seen live and in person. Probably the most exciting one I've ever seen. I do remember, especially in the playoffs, like you may see a regular season situation and you're like, oh, and we probably should at some point go back. And everybody remembers Teresa Weatherspoon's shot, right? So that's one that stands out to you as far as WNBA. But just the game winners, period. We need to go back and like, where does this shot fit in? Because it was just unbelievable. And the place went crazy. Long story short, Chicago got the game, the ball back, and there wasn't a lot of time after that. I mean, after the shot, like emotionally, I know I just squeezed Pam Ward's leg. Like I just could not let go of her leg. Like I just couldn't believe that shot went in. But there was just so much going on and so much adrenaline. But Chicago did get the ball back and Diamond drove and she ended up kicking it to a Stu Du who had just hit a 3-point shot from the corner a couple possessions before and was way off on this one. Some people said Diamond should have shot it. You know, I felt like she was somewhat guarded enough where I understood that she, you know, felt like she was making the right pass. Maybe someone else should have been in that corner. You know, or they could have ran it to someone else to get the three. Who knows? A lot of things could have happened. This is all hindsight after we've had lots of time to think about it. But it was just so exciting and so sad at the same time for Chicago, where they looked like they had just made enough big plays to get a win, and a team that I thought was going to make a deep run in the playoffs and were a championship contender and were playing much better basketball down the stretch of the regular season than Vegas. And it came down to basically one heave.
Unlikely. I mean, literally had been trailing for majority of that game. So Chicago definitely came in there with an intensity, because I remember beforehand when we were talking about Chicago coming into the playoffs, you know, how offensively sound they were and how they had literally were coming off of a 5-game streak where they were over 100 plus points. You know what I mean? So they were hot and they were the hotter team and they looked it for majority of that game. So I know how devastating that must have felt for them. And imagine being in Courtney Vandersloot's shoes, like how she must have felt after, you know, that happened on her pass, by the way. So
yeah, I mean, after, you know, she had such a great season. Mm-hmm. Just so you felt off. I mean, Sloot, though she does turn over the ball, I'm not saying she's like perfect, but she had played a really solid game and
yep.
You just don't expect those kind of mistakes and errors. I mean, you were heartbroken. She didn't even make herself available to the media in the end. So just,
but to turn this into a positive though, LaChyna, you have to know that, well, I mean, I know you know, but if there are Chicago fans who hung their head after that, they shouldn't have, because no one expected Chicago to be in that position at all entering this season. So with that, you know, I turn the question to you as to what can we expect to see from Chicago moving forward, especially in 2020? I mean, they've got to know that they've got a much better shot of returning, if not furthering their playoff hopes next year than they did this year.
Well, I think you're going to see a very hungry team. I think this was a heartbreaker for them. I just loved the way they played this year. You know, I mean, James Wade had that team drinking the juice. And, you know, I think a number of us have said over the last few years that Diamond is going to be an all-star MVP in this league one day. She's that good. And we saw that from her. And just a fun team. You know, they played so well on the offensive end. They got a little bit better on defense. And I think we're going to see a hungry team that comes back and definitely is a championship contender. You know, hopefully everyone returns healthy. They get Lavender back. That just gives them, mm-hmm. you know, another experienced player on the floor in those situations who's, you know, got size, that's been in the battles. Champion, so they only get better, and I'm looking forward to what's ahead. I mean, James Wade definitely deserved that Coach of the Year award, and it's been a great season for Chicago.
Now, on the other side of the bracket, Minnesota took on Seattle, losing by 10, 84 to 74, and then Seattle also depleted again, as we knew, did not have a Breanna Stewart, eventually not having a Sue Bird. They lost to the Sparks in round two of single elimination game, and I don't really think that there were any storylines in that particular series. I don't think that was anything that we didn't expect. I don't know if you wanted to touch on that at all, just to give the fans any kind of thoughts that you had on that series. And other than the fact that I think Minnesota played well for what they were faced with, and Cheryl Reeve winning Executive of the Year, well deserved, because I don't think anyone really saw her bringing that team with what she had to the position that they got. So I didn't really have any storylines from there, but definitely wanted to open it up to you in the event that there was something that struck your attention from them.
Yeah, just more of, you know, I really thought that series could have gone either way. And I say series, but it was
a game.
Right, one game. I thought that could have gone either way. But as you said, hats off to both Cheryl Reeve and Dan Hughes for what they did this year. You know, I thought Minnesota was playing some of their better basketball towards the end of the season until their loss at L.A., and I think that kind of shook them a little bit. Wasn't probably the showing they wanted to have coming into the playoffs. And on the other end, Seattle had just beat Dallas. So on the road, and that's how they got to host. And that's what it really came down to. Would Seattle had won, had that game been in the Target Center? I don't think so. Seattle got a big boost from their fans, mm-hmm. and credit them for the way they shot the ball. And Jewel Lloyd was fantastic. And Jordan Canada,
yeah.
You know, like, I mean, without the services of Natasha Howard, who had been on the bench with a lot of foul trouble, I just really liked Seattle's courage and Alicia Clark. I just think that's a team that they refused to lay down all year. And, you know, on the other end of things, you know, Minnesota learned a little bit more about themselves. You know, they could probably look at that LA game and the Seattle loss and say, okay, Cheryl can probably say, okay, I learned a little bit about this group in the fire, because she hadn't been in the fire with that group,
mm-hmm.
you know, with no Lindsey Whalen and Rebecca Brunson and no Maya Moore. And, you know, like, she probably learned a little bit about what that group needs moving forward. And they needed that experience. Because even though Minnesota didn't have their normal guns, there's always an expectation that they're going to win. And so how you carry that expectation and how you, you know, go about continuing that winning culture, whether it's Nafisa Collier, who was the rookie of the year, or, Odyssey Sims, or Lexi Brown, like, you know, these are the pieces moving forward. And, you know, we don't know what will happen with Simone Augustus. You know, we tried to have the retirement conversation, just in nothing else, but because of the ongoing injuries and things. But, it looks like, sounds like, I mean, she's on the last year of her contract, but sounds like she wants to continue to play. So we'll see what happens in, with Minnesota there. But, I think they'll make some tweaks, but they do have at least some good pieces to build around and had a successful year. And for Seattle, it's like, okay, getting healthy now, you know, Breanna Stewart back, trying to get Sue Bird back, what those players will be able to give next year. But to me, you get those two players back on a team that has grown leaps and bounds without them. Just hats off to Dan Hughes, his staff, Gary Kloppenberg, because I thought they were so great defensively on what they accomplished this year.
So we're going to move on to our semifinals matchup where we saw the Sun, who, because of their two seeding, were on a bye for the first two rounds, and also having home court advantage, which was something that we had previously discussed was going to be huge for them. They dominated the series against LA from beginning to end. Coming into this matchup, I know I was very excited to see what the backcourt play was going to look like. You know, Courtney Williams and Jasmine Thomas against Chelsea Gray and Raquana Williams. What were we going to expect from there? But, you know, they were outscored by Connecticut by 48 points in games 2 and 3 combined. And I think the biggest storyline surrounding this series obviously ended up being the situation with Candace Parker, her performance, the coaching decisions of Derek Fisher, and eventually what led to him deciding to do some lineup changes, which caused him to bench her with only 11 minutes played. LaChyna, this is interesting to me because I'm not sure how I would feel as a star player sitting on the bench while my team is down 14 points in an elimination game. But what were your thoughts on that? And I mean, like, from the decisions of a coach perspective, and then also from the perspective of a player who has been known to help their team out. You know, when your team is struggling, when you're struggling as a player, do you as a coach say, hey, you know, don't figure it out and just sit down? Or do you let them try at least?
Yeah, this was, oh boy, a lot of conversation around, you know, this, because Candace Parker is a 2-time MVP and she's a WNBA champion and she will go down as one of the greatest players to ever played. And let me just say before I even start this whole conversation that, I was not covering the series, and our other crew of Rebecca Lobo and Holly Rowe and Ryan Ruco covered it brilliantly. And so I don't have a lot of insight on this. We were working a whole nother series, so a lot of, you know, the information and tidbits I got were just on the move. But, you know, and I thought Brian Agler in studio was great because he got to give his comments as a former head coach of the LA Sparks on, you know, he got to give his thoughts on, you know, what kind of happened and what should have maybe happened, what needs to happen. And I thought what he said was just spot on. It's like, if you want to be a championship team, you've got to have your best players on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just me. And I mean, I haven't even accomplished one millionth of what Derek Fisher has accomplished in his career. So I'm not claiming to know or, you know, all the things that go through his mind or that I know what it takes to build a championship team or any of that. So let me just jump ahead of y'all in my mentions. but in an elimination game, right? Like, say, even if you knew you were going to have another game after this, like, say, if it was like 1-1 and you didn't like the way, you know, your group was working together or didn't think your starters were leading, like, you know, you have time for a lesson to teach, you know, to say, hey guys, you know, this is not going to be acceptable. In an elimination game, to me, what that says is you need to throw everything you've got out there because a championship is still lurking. Like, you still got a chance to win a championship. And these players work hard. I mean, whether it's their diet or their rehab or their strength and conditioning or the extra shots, like they work hard to put themselves in position, in particular this LA Sparks team that had had so much adversity. Like they work hard to put themselves in position to win a championship. And so for then your coach to, and I'm just going to speak in Candace Parker's sake because I don't even know exactly like how the minutes ended up with everybody else. But from what I understand, he benched his whole, like at least three or four of his starters in the fourth quarter. But I think if you're Candace Parker, you've proven that you can carry a team. You've proven that you can turn it on. And Candace will be the first to admit that she has not, you know, had some of her best moments this year. And I will say that I think, and she doesn't always say it to me. She does not. She never makes her health a factor, but she has not felt well. And we all know when Candace Parker feels well, she plays well. And when she's not spry, we know what she looks like when she's not spry. You know, it's like, you know, when her knees may be bothering her. I think she said on Jamel Hill's podcast, she's had like 7 knee surgeries. And so that's someone who is playing in pain very often. And I don't know how much of, you know, that played into anything as far as her energy or whatever Derek Fisher was trying to do. But I believe he was saying he was trying to basically find the right lineups. That's why he benched her.
Right.
Or the right
energy.
She
said that
something
she was
like that.
Fine in her post-game.
Yeah, she did say she was mentally and physically fine. But I just don't think you bench Candace Parker at the end of the day. I think she has done enough for the Sparks franchise that she should be able to go down with the ship. Like, she has won enough games that if they're going to lose, then they should go down with her on the floor, period. And so that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think everyone knows that that team was built around her and NECA. And, you know, if you're not going to put those players on the floor with a chance to advance and win a championship, then... You know,
it if
is it
I
her
can,
team?
You right. You know, and that's what I was just about to get at, like, because you're right. He didn't play. He didn't play Chelsea. He didn't play NECA. He didn't play Candace in the fourth quarter at all. And this kind of leads back to in the beginning, which is a very this is how sports is, right? Like one moment, you know, you're praising a person and with the snap of a finger, the very next moment you're calling for this person's job. Like that's how sports is, unfortunately. And in the beginning of this season, people questioned if Derek Fisher was the person to lead this team from a coaching perspective. Then the season happened. Yes, Candace missed a couple of games. There were, you know, questions surrounding the chemistry, if they were going to figure it out. And then lo and behold, towards the end of the season, not only did they figure it out, but they came back with a vengeance. And now Derek Fisher's in the conversation of coach of the year because of what he's done and how he was able to turn the team, you know, around from the beginning of the season to the end. Now you get to the second round or the semifinal round. And now there are questions on, once again, is Derek Fisher the person who should have had this job? Was he qualified enough? Did he make the best decisions? Why would you do this? This is just kind of how it goes. And so at this point, you have to wonder, you know, and I know that there have been talk where people have said this is not going to change their relationship. And I don't know. I don't know Candace Parker personally. I don't know Derek Fisher personally. So I don't know what their relationship is for me to make an assumption on whether or not it changes anything. But you do have to wonder about where the direction of this team is now headed. If your best player and the person who has gone through the fire and more with this team is not on the court for what should be the most important game in the entire season, an elimination game to continue on to the WNBA finals. So you do have to wonder, you know, what the relationship is going to be with this moving forward after this. And I know I would like to think that, you know, they're both professionals. And so it isn't something that you're going to carry over from season to season, but it does leave you, you know, wondering how much, in this off season, how much that decision is going to affect what happens with the team moving forward.
Yeah, and that's the challenge. I mean, everyone was showing the clip of where it looked like Candace Parker was mouthing something on the bench saying, like, why do this now?
Right.
You know, like, she looked disappointed, and I don't know what she was speaking to, but she's kind of gone silent since the whole thing happened. But trust is important, and players trust coaches, and coaches have to trust players. And, you know, I would love to get a more lengthy explanation from Derek Fisher at some point of kind of, you know, what he feels like. I'm not saying he has to rehash the whole thing, but, you know, even where he feels like his relationship with Candace is. And, you know, I'm sure they've had several conversations since then, and they probably don't care and don't think it's any of our business. But I would like to know, you know, just if there's unity, because that could impact how things move in the future. And, you know, one thing that people have often said about Candace Parker is that she is so knowledgeable and has an amazing basketball IQ, and knows the game sometimes better than some of the coaches that, you know, we have. Not to say that she's had, but just she could be coaching her own team. And so that can be a challenge for a coach, you know, a player that sees things and has her ideas about how the game should be played, and could probably give you some pushback here and there on things. And so I think the trust in particular with Candace Parker is important, and maybe you may see with some other teams just because of the type of player she is and because of her knowledge of the game. But that was a sad, sad ending, because I definitely, and credit to the Connecticut Sun.
Hey.
Because they're going to listen to this podcast and say we didn't talk about them. Disrespect.
Hashtag. Hey, but don't cover us, Courtney. Yeah, we didn't do it.
We didn't take any credit away from Connecticut. They were outstanding. And, you know, Jasmine Thomas was fantastic. Alyssa Thomas was amazing. And Courtney Williams was just a star. And, you know, not to take anything away from them, but in that game three, I mean, I never would have seen LA getting swept. And in that game three, on top of being in Long Beach, it looked like they threw in the towel at the end with the decision to kind of bench Parker,
yeah,
and move along.
Role players did that.
Just
so y'all know, don't get it confused.
Role players, we get into that next.
So, over to the other side of the semifinals, where again the Washington Mystics were taking on Dev's Las Vegas Aces. And see, this is what she does. You know, she causes all this ruckus all season long, and then doesn't show up to come and face the music about what happened to her Aces in this game. And let's not, you know, let's not try to play Las Vegas, which I don't think any of us have done. They really did play a challenge. They really did try their hardest to challenge the Washington Mystics. And on top of that, they brought drama on the court and off of it, because Liz Cambage, she basically told y'all to get your weight up. Like, straight up like that. Get your weight up. Don't come in the post banging with her, and you can't do it. You know what I'm saying? Hit the weight room. Get your weight up.
Can we run that back?
We can run that back.
I just kept sailing inside. You know, they got small forwards guarding me. If they can't handle it, get in the weight room or get out of the post. So that's what I'm doing. I'm just doing my thing inside.
And then after that, Natasha Cloud took that real personal.
I don't really get into the trash talking mode when it comes to protecting my teammates and having my teammates back. I'm defending one with a while now. So if you see me doing some push-ups tomorrow on the court, you might see me do that, come out. But for the most part, again, I'll take my undersized forward and enjoy it any day of the week.
Cool. She took it very personal. Where they came out the next game and they wanted to show that they had what it took and some to bang in the post with Cambage. And so, I'm just wondering how much that fueled Washington, because I think Vegas challenged them on a level that other teams had not so far this season. And for this to be their first matchup, because also as the number one seed, they had faced the double bye, for that to be their first matchup. And as you alluded to previously, they were coming off of, the high from the Chicago win. This was something that I think that Vegas genuinely and truly thought that they had what it took to defeat Washington and to move on to the WNBA finals.
Yeah, I mean, it was Vegas. I mean, let's start with the drama, right? Like, Liz Cambage is a walking soundbite, and she says what's on her mind, and I really appreciate that about her. Some people say, oh, she, you know, talks to us trash, and I mean, the day after she made those comments, it was a little tense, even with her own team, where they were like, all right, Liz, like, you know.
Why you writing these checks?
We gotta play, right. We girl, okay. And I think it definitely got Washington fired up. Like, I'm a believer in, like, you don't add fuel to the fire. Like, you know, these teams are so good already. So though that was probably what was on Liz's mind, I probably wouldn't have poked a bear, but
I'm the opposite.
Liz backs it up.
Go ahead, girl. Let them know.
Girl, I know how you are. But she backs it up, you know, and she's the kind of player that can talk trash and be on her A game, and not everybody can do that. And so, I thought it was a funny moment. I thought it was a fun moment. What I didn't think was fun, though, was like some of the physicality in the post. And I think we showed one foul in particular in game three that Liz had gotten away with, like, basically clotheslining Emma Mieseman. And mm-hmm. she did tell us, you know, like on several occasions, she's spoken out about the beatings that she feels like she takes in the post, being a big at 6'8", and that Brittany Griner at 6'9" has to deal with. That's a conversation that definitely needs to happen in the off season, because that dialogue is what came after the incident where Brittany Griner was suspended, you know, after the whole deal with Christina Nigue. So I think it is something, because I've heard WNBA players just say, I don't feel safe, meaning they don't feel safe with the way that, you know, calls are made in those situations, or that they're handled, or the communication, whatever it is, that there needs to be a better relationship with the officials and with WNBA players in terms of how they feel like they're protected or they're not protected. So, but there was just, I just love the Vegas team. I mean, they are Bill Laimbeer team, where they're confident and they're tough and they're physical. And, you know, they it was definitely some trash talking that went on. I got trash talked. So, you know, just made it kind of fun.
If you were not exempt, then no one was exempt.
Nobody.
Nobody. Another thing, though, that I think is really interesting to note is that, you know, there were a lot of expectation for Vegas heading into this season. And so to go from basically no one's expecting you to do anything, you got the number one pick in Asia Wilson, and, you know, we'll just see what Asia can possibly do, to being in the semifinals of the WNBA finals, I think that leaves a lot to be desired. And of course, the question is, you know, will we see Liz Cambage back in a Las Vegas uniform next year? What can we expect, you know, from Las Vegas heading into next season? What have you heard about, you know, what the direction of this team is going to be? And I know this is just a week ago, so there may not have been much talk as far as the future of this team, but there is definitely a sour taste that has to be in the mouths of those players who want to desperately get back to, you know, this position again. And we've heard Liz say that this is a lot of fun, and she had a lot of fun this season, and some of the best fun that she's had in the WNBA on this team this year. So you've got to think that that means that she wants to be back and she wants to get to this position again.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing we saw this year with the number one and number two teams advancing to the finals is that home court matters. You know, like, I think next year, just like Connecticut had done in the past, Vegas starts with, okay, so can we host, you know? Can we get that double bye to the semifinals? Because it may have been a different situation with Washington had they been the team with the full head of steam coming in with two wins at home or whatever. And again, not to take anything away from Washington, but, you know, I just feel like Vegas's biggest off season thing is, well, you know, next year's an Olympic year. So mm-hmm. I don't know what Liz Cambage's schedule is going to look like. Is Australia wants to get back to meddling in their dominance. And Liz has made it clear that the Olympics are her priority. And so I don't know what, you know, that would mean for her schedule with the team next year, but they've got to find definitely better chemistry with Asia Wilson and Liz Cambage. I still thought that there were just too many games where they didn't know how to play together, how to maximize both of those players and their strength, like we used to see Tim Duncan and David Robinson do. Now, you know, that's just one example. I mean, you can look across the board as far as WNBA championship caliber teams. How did Maya Moore learn to play with Simone Augustus? And, mm-hmm. you know, how do you integrate two great players on the floor together? That's something they got to figure out. They figured out their point guard situation. I thought, you know, Kelsey Plum, to me, showed the world what she can do and be in this league and the place that she should be on the floor next year for Vegas. Now, what that does with Jackie Young and how that moves all the rest of the pieces around, I'm not sure. But I know that there's nobody else on that roster that can do what Kelsey Plum does or what we saw her do in the playoffs. So you take her, you take Asia, you take Liz. And it's a very talented team. You know, I thought McBride sometimes was a little forgotten about too, which I understand because you're trying to establish the relationship of those two bigs, which they get along great. They support each other, but that doesn't mean they always understand how to maximize each other. And so, you know, how those pieces all fit together, and they're young. I mean, that's the thing. Like, yeah, they haven't found their chemistry yet in its entirety because they're a young team, but they did some things very well, which is control the pace, got up and down the floor. You know, they did a good enough job defensively to give them an opportunity to create pace. The best defensive team in the league this year. They established an identity in terms of how they wanted to play. I just thought they grew up so much. So to me, you know, I think Bill Laimbeer said, we'll win a championship in 3 years, and this is year two. And could they have won it this year? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do I feel like in some sense that they underachieved? I do, because I look at like what we started to see from them in the playoffs, and I was like, wow, this team really has a chance to win it all. And so for that series to not go five, for them to not, you know, win two games was kind of surprising to me. But again, that says a lot about the Mystics, and Vegas still has a lot to celebrate in terms of what they've established, not only on the team, but also with their fans in Vegas.
All right, LaChina. Well, before we close this out, and I know you're probably not going to give it to me, but I'm going to do my due diligence for the fans and ask anyway, who do you have winning game two?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
She
gonna skate y'all, watch.
No, let me think. Who do I have winning game two? You know, I just feel so good about each of these teams' home court advantage that I have this series going five. So I'm gonna say I see Washington winning game two and then Connecticut winning three and four. And then coming back to Washington for an exciting game five. I don't know who's going to win this series because to me, these two teams are that evenly matched. As I watch the next two or three games, I'll be ready to make a prediction, but I'm not today. But I at least told you who I thought was going to win game two. I think we're going five, and I think it's going to go two and two. And that should be fun for WNBA fans.
Agreed. I am going to agree with you that I think this series is going five. I do, however, feel like what is going to add to the intrigue of this series is that as well as both of these teams play at home, that each of them will drop one on the road. So I think that the Sun will win tomorrow in game two, but I also think that Washington will win either a game three or a game four. I do not see both of these teams playing their best at home, and it's just because it's so customary that they do that I think some shakeup is going to happen, and that's going to be it for me. So we'll see who's it going to be.
Okay, Connecticut Sun girl.
I got you, Courtney. I got you. Okay, role players. I got y'all.
Oh, but listen, tell them a bunch of role players did that. Tell them a bunch of role players.
Oh, Courtney Williams is a star in the making.
I can't with you. I cannot.
All right, LaChina. Well, we see how Dev act. She ain't even hop on.
You know what, Dev? That is so messed up. But that's all right, because we're going to put you on the spot next week. You still got some splaining to do.
She sure do. So, basketball fans, please make sure that you keep up with us on all of our podcasting platforms, Apple, TuneIn, Spotify, the ESPN app. Please download, subscribe, rate us, share us. Just keep us relevant, because clearly y'all are blowing LaChina up when she's on the road, letting her know that y'all don't hear from us. So tell your friends and everyone to continue to download and support us. We greatly appreciate it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Around the Rim Pod. I'm at @SheKnowsSports_. LaChina is at
LaChina Robinson.
And Dev is at
Miss Peters 14.
Please blow her up and tell her y'all don't appreciate her skipping out on the podcast like that. You can also send us an email. We do receive them, and we will definitely make some time in a future show to share some of the emails that we receive. But you can also email us at aroundtherimpodcast@gmail.com. We will see you guys. Talk to you guys later. We're out.
Thank you for listening to Around the Rim. Check out more podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app.